Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Release the Innocent. Release the Innocent. This is Mary Neal. I want to welcome you to Human Rights Demand channel on Blog Talk Radio. Our show today is called Release the Innocent. And we have a mother online who will tell you about her son who is mentally ill and imprisoned with your tax money for having a common treatable health condition that is not being addressed effectively. You cannot make a sick person well because you punish them. You cannot punish mental illness out of anyone. You treat sick people. You do not punish them. You do not also have the legal or moral right to murder them as you did to my brother, Larry Neal. Larry Neal was secretly arrested and murdered behind bars. This has happened to many people, whether they were black, white, Native American, or Latino. They have been murdered behind bars. Mentally ill people are often brutalized and murdered in our streets. As a matter of fact, over 50% of our police violence cases involve a person with mental illness. So I'm going to turn you over to this mother so that she can tell you what is happening to her son, who has been revolving in and out of prisons and jails since he was a child. Since he was a teenager, he was diagnosed with mental illness, and he is being punished with your tax money when what is needed is an AOT program. AOT programs provide for food and housing and also continued psychiatric treatment. When her son is on his treatment program and is taking his psychiatric meds, he is as healthy as you or I. He was able to go to school, complete his GED, and do some time in college. He could be doing what you and I do. He could be living a wholesome life if he only would stay on his psychiatric treatment. But like many people with serious mental illness, he will discontinue his treatment shortly after he's released from prison, discontinues his psychiatric treatment once he's stabilized and released, and he does okay for a while because some of the drugs are still in his bloodstream, but he always relapses, and he always relapses when he's not in treatment. So I want to welcome you today, Ms. Lillian. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Mary. Thank you. And how are you?
I am doing absolutely fine. I don't know if you have the list in front of you of the things that I asked you about your son. Just tell us, first of all, his name, what jail facility he's in. If you have his inmate number, then that would be good, too, because we've invited the public to get involved in your son's care. I say in his care, not in his punishment. That's a prison investor scheme to keep your son and 1.25 million other people who have mental illness behind bars, to keep him revolving in and out of prisons, generating high profits for prison investors when they could be living wholesome lives on treatment programs like AOT. Now, we know that some mentally ill people have done terrible crimes. Yes, they've even done murders, random murders, gone to shopping centers and opened fire. We know that. And those people, we say, need to be committed to mental hospitals They need to be committed to mental hospitals for long-term care and possibly for life, depending on their offenses and depending on their mental functionality. So not everyone will work out on a community care program like AOT, but many, many people would, and we feel that your son, whose name is Paul Castaway, would benefit by such a program. So I'm going to turn it over to you and let you talk to us about Paul Castaway for about 15 minutes, and then I will be back. So let's hear from you. Ms. Lillian, let's hear from you regarding your son, Paul, what age he started having difficulty, what you feel like brought on his mental problems, and how he responds when he's on medication compared to how he reacts when he's off medication. Some of the cruelty, some of the horrible things that have happened to him by community people as well as by police and prison guards. And just give us your opinions and your information about Paul Castaway, because your story is the story of many people, especially Native Americans, African Americans, Latinos, poor whites. Your story is not very different from the story that my mother could tell, that even Senator Deeds, he was refused mental health treatment for his son who went home and then stabbed Senator Deeds of Virginia in his neck and killed himself. Your story is not very different from millions of Americans, and that's why we invited you today so that you could tell us about your son, Paul Castaway. And I thank you for coming on air.
Thank you for having me, Mary. My son, his name is Paul Ernest Castaway, birth date 10-10-79. His booking number is 535-881, and he is currently incarcerated in the Denver County Jail, P.O. Box 1108-80201, and he is in there for violation of probation. They are looking to give him up to 18 months in prison. Now, when he was a child, I lost my children to social services, and he was sexually molested in foster care. The ICWA, Indian Child Welfare worker, the social services worker, they all investigated, but nothing was done. They didn't charge anybody, and it was a little girl, but I think that's where the problem started when he was in foster care, and they just moved him out of the home with nobody charged, nothing was done about it, no counseling, no nothing. So I got him back, and I had him until the age of 11. And so when he got molested, he was 5. And so I started having problems with him. So I sent him to his father, who was remarried to a Latino woman, and they had a child together. And so they took my son, Paul, who was 11, and started raising him. Well, while he was in their care, started getting in trouble as a juvenile and put into various group homes, various detention centers, and I would always go visit him, even though I didn't have custody. And when he was in that home, the lady, his stepmother, groomed him and began sexually molesting him, sexually assaulting him. And when he turned 18 years old, she took off with him and made him the father figure to his little brother. Bought him all the booze he wanted, bought him a car, bought him contacts. That's what I mean by grooming him before he turned 18. So this lady has never been, even though she works at the girls' club right now, which I think she has no business being around any kind of child. They had a four or five year relationship where they lived together. And then she kind of kicked him out, so they broke up, and he started getting in more trouble where he was getting arrested for various things. He was never involved in gangs, but he was asked to be in a gang, and the guy that he told him no, he did not want to be in a gang. So they hit him with a pipe. He was left out in the alley to die. And if a lady hadn't seen him laying there in the alley, he was in a coma for 2 days from this assault in the head. They had a soap on his ear. He's been hit by a car. He's been, the police let the dogs bite him up twice while with handcuffs on. He's been in trouble as an adult, and he had a girlfriend, and he broke her window looking for her, went inside, didn't steal anything, didn't take anything, and he cut himself, and he just walked back out, and they followed his trail of blood, and that's how they found him and arrested him and charged him with burglary. And they put him on probation, and he couldn't comply, so they finally put him in prison for not complying. So he has been in and out of prison for the past 5 years. And every time he gets out, you know, he's when he takes his medication for a little while, and he's okay. He's been diagnosed with schizophrenia, bipolar. I just got a letter from him today that said that he's on Vistoril, V-I-S-T-O-R-I-L, but he doesn't like it because it makes him feel high. That's what he says. And he wants to ask to continue that with the Prozac. So he's asking for help. He's asking for help. And this is the first time that I've read a letter where he's asked for help. So I do believe that he wants to be happy and he wants to be well. I believe that once, if he got into a program where he in a structured environment, that he would do well because he wants to go back to college. He's very, very intelligent, but he has short-term memory from all the concussions. He's been beat, pistol-whipped. He got his teeth knocked out. And he's got scars on his head where gang members jumped him. He's been on a 3-day hold in the psychiatric unit in Denver Health here in Denver because when they came to help him, he just lost it, and he was trying to fight the paramedics and everything because he was so angry. So he's hurting inside. And I just want him to live a happy life like everyone else. I don't want him, you know, and to be continue drinking and getting in trouble and going back to jail, getting hit by cars, getting, you know, beat up, and he'll come to my door bloody, full of blood, and I have to clean him up. And I feel bad. I sometimes blame myself for sending him to his father, but I know it's not my fault. But I'm just asking and pleading for everyone to listen to my story, to know that he is a good man. And he's very loving. Sometimes he'll bring people to my house that are hungry and say, "Mom, will you feed them? They're hungry." And I will. I'll you know, people from the streets, and then I tell them they have to leave, but I will feed them. So my son is a very loving person with one son, and he got, he's not able to take care of his son. He got served with child support papers, which I believe was, you know, he cannot even take care of himself. So he is wanting the help, and he wants to go back to school. And I think if he's given the chance in a structured environment that this could happen, he can make it happen. And I just want him to be happy, and I keep telling him that. I just want you to be happy. I don't want you to be so angry and hurt, you know. I don't think he's ever got counseling. And he started going to AA at the age of 12. He had a sponsor and was going to AA with adults. No, not kids. He went with adults. And so, you know, he knows he has a drinking problem. And he gets so sick. And he's, you know, got to the point where he was throwing up blood one summer. So I don't want to lose my son to prison. I don't want to lose him to alcoholism or mental illness. He do something stupid because he's not in his right mind. And I've seen him in and out of hospitals. So I'm just pleading with people to listen, you know, that my son, he is a good person, that he does not deserve to be in prison. It doesn't help. It doesn't help him. He's been to the hole a couple of times. And, you know, since he's got out of the hole, I mean, since he's got out of prison, he just seems different. You know, each time he's a little quieter or you know, he's just something different about him. So I believe that this AOT program, if it's possible, he's willing to do that and stay on his medication, because I have talked to him about it. He called me right after the show on Saturday. So, and I love him so much. I don't want to lose him to anything. I'm always expecting the worst and expecting the police to come to my door. They brought him to my door bloody. And I don't want that call in the middle of the night, you know, that he's been shot or that he's been killed. So I just want help for him. And that's about it.
Well, thank you, Miss Lillian. Now, your son happens to be a Native American, is that right?
Yes. The Lakota Tsechangu tribe in Rosebud, South Dakota. I am enrolled.
Both you and your children in different generations were removed from your families and partly raised part of the time in foster care. Is that right?
That's right.
Do you realize that in 1972, the U.S. Senate had a study done, and it showed that up to 35% of our Native American children have been removed from their families at some point, and they have been removed from their reservations, ripped from their cultures, and raised back in foster care or care homes. Were you aware of that huge number, 35%?
I knew there was a lot because I was in a group home and there were nothing but Native children in there. I was raised by non-Natives and was very abused in every which way you can think of. I was bullied. I was called the squaw. And they made us eat in the other room while they were eating steaks and hamburgers. We were eating pork and beans and cream corn on bread. So I know of the abuse that I went through and what my children went through. And I fought social services hard. I did it. I worked very hard to get my children back. Got a job, got my apartment, and I got them back because I didn't want
them. Well, I congratulate you on fighting for your children so that they wouldn't be subjected long term to what you went through. But yet and still, your son, who was also abused in foster care, and then further abused when he went to live with his dad, who had a stepmother there who was attracted to your son at age 11. And by the time he was 16, she had run off with him. Is that right?
She started having sex with him at the age of 16 and waited till he turned 18 to run off with him.
And then she ran off with your son?
Yes.
So he was abused in foster care, then he was further abused in his own home by a sexually promiscuous stepmother. And this was very confusing to your young son. That either brought on his mental illness or it certainly hurt him further than he would have been. How do you feel about him being attacked by neighborhood gangs?
I wished I could have been there, and I wished I could have helped him call the police. I don't think anybody called the police that was watching what was going on. They beat his girlfriend up too. It just angers me that, you know, he's a nice looking, my son's a nice looking man, and they knocked all his teeth out, and he's got scars on his head. I feel bad.
And he has also been brutalized in prison. Is that right?
Yeah, he was put in the hole a couple of times, and he's gotten into fights. He's gotten into fights over him being called an Indian or get them somebody trying to steal what he has, and he never has anything when he goes to prison. He never does. I'm on a fixed income, and I send him what money I can, what little money I can. And so,
and you feel like your son would do well if he was in an AOT program that helped him have housing, regular meals, and also the most important thing is continued psychiatric treatment so that he didn't lapse back into mental illness. Is that right?
Yes, and counseling as well. I believe that he really needs to get it out, the hurt and the pain that he has inside.
So he needs psychiatric consultations, and he needs to stay on his meds. Is that what you consider to be the primary issue?
Yes.
Why will he not do that on his own? Why will he not keep his psychiatric appointments and take his meds himself and go to the pharmacy and get refills? Why will he not do that if it's not mandated by the court?
Because he feels like he doesn't have to, he doesn't need to. He feels like he's okay. He feels normal. So he starts drinking, and that's his normal, is drinking.
Only does he have mental health problems, but like lots of people with mental illness, he also has substance abuse problems in that he drinks, and he also has been known to dabble in marijuana. Is that right?
Yes.
So what happens with mentally ill people who are out of treatment, a great many of them seek to do self-treatment with drugs and alcohol. Are you aware that that is a very classic problem?
Yes, I am.
But you feel like if he was in a position to have continued housing, adequate food, and mandated treatment, that he knew he was under court order to continue. You feel like he would comply with that, and he would keep his apartment or his group home. He would keep his doctor's appointments and taking his meds, and he would be able to avoid future arrests, future hospitalization, and some of the dangers that are presented to mentally ill people who live free in the community. Is that right? What do you feel like would help other than that? Is there anything else that you feel like would work for Paul other than having an AOT program? Is there any other way to get him on track and keep him on track other than court-ordered treatment and living in a care home? Is there any other way for society to help him be living a wholesome life and to continue living a wholesome life? Anything else that you can think of?
I think being in a structured environment.
A structured environment.
Yes, and maybe, not maybe, but and getting back into our culture. Because we used to go, we have sweat lodges, that's a ceremony, a cleansing ceremony. And I used to take my children when they were young. So I believe that, and he's going to let his hair grow. So I believe that maybe getting back into our heritage, our culture also, if I were to go with him, because he doesn't like to be alone. And if
So in other words, though, he wouldn't really do any of those things if he's not in an AOT program, would he?
No,
first of all, if he's not getting the counseling, if he's not taking his meds, he wouldn't be in any mental condition to attend cultural ceremonies with you, would he?
No.
So actually what you're saying is that you feel like this cycle that he's been in for most of his adult life, of going in and out of prisons and jails, will continue to be his life story unless he has an AOT program. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
That's the only way your son can have a normal life or anything resembling a normal life is if he has court-mandated treatment and if he gets assistance regarding his basic needs for living, food, clothing, and shelter. Is that right?
Yes, and so some type
of
social
If he has that, there is no telling what he can become. There's no telling how far he can go because he's a person who finished high school with a GED and also has even attended college. There's no telling what wonderful gifts society is missing by locking up your son, Paul Castaway, and many other mentally ill people. Are you aware that we've had a mentally ill man, Mr. Nash, who won a Nobel Prize for mathematics?
No.
We have had mentally ill people to win Nobel Prizes, to be great mathematicians, to be great artists. We've had mentally ill people. Did you know that even Elvis Presley was pronounced bipolar after his death?
Yes, and I love Elvis Presley.
The thing is that there are so many people. Even Nina Simone took medication for mental illness. There are so many people that we admire and that we would be in much worse shape had they not been born, but they were taking medication. They were able to make it in society. Do you agree that AOT programs are the only help that's possible for Paul Castaway and many other people with serious mental illness?
Strongly agree.
Well, now you've heard it from two people who've had serious mental illness in relatives. I can attest to everything that Lillian has said about her son, Paul Castaway. My brother, Larry Neal, was living in a care home, but the care home had no authority to force the people there to take their medication. They had no authority to force them to take their medication. So simply even being in a care home is not enough provision. I read recently an article that said one of the main things that the mentally ill need is housing. But you and I know, don't we, that even if a mentally ill person is given an apartment or given a room in a boarding home, a care home, that if they do not stay on their medication, they're going to have serious problems in the care home. They're going to have serious problems when they walk out of the door because they will seek to self-medicate with drugs and alcohol and be sent to jail for possession charges. Is that right, Miss Lillian?
Yes, ma'am.
So anything other than mandated care, enforced treatment, will simply not work for people who are too mentally ill to acknowledge their own sickness and accept or seek treatment. That's what we're saying to you. And that is what the prison investors know. Now, I want the audience to know that right now we have a bill before Congress called H.R. 3717. And that bill is called the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act. And it has three important provisions that would provide for the end of imprisoning people for mental illness. And those three important provisions are that, number one, it will resume Medicaid for psychiatric inpatients. People either need to have psychiatric hospitals if they are in a crisis state. They need to have psychiatric hospitals to go to get stabilized. And other people who have committed violent offenses or who have the inability to rely on their ability to function outside of a controlled environment, they need to be in mental hospitals and not locked up in somebody's solitary confinement in a jail. They don't deserve that. They have a sickness, not something that should be punished. So we need inpatient facilities for people who either need long-term containment and for people who need to be stabilized. Medicaid insurance was withdrawn in the 70s, and for 40 years we've been steadily building our prison population to the delight of private prison investors. The second thing they need is AOT programs. That's what Ms. Lillian and I have been discussing, the need for a program that provides for their housing and food and continued psychiatric treatment that is court mandated. Why would you ask somebody who's seriously mentally ill if they want treatment? Do you think they're going to say yes? Do you think they will have that sense of reason? That's what they are, is sick. So you don't rely on someone who's sick to recognize his own illness and agree to treatment. That's lunacy on our parts if we allow that to continue. And the third thing that this bill provides for is crisis intervention training for police officers and prison guards to reduce violence against the mentally ill people. It's one thing for gang members to brutally attack Paul Castaway and beat him into a concussion and a coma. That happened. But also we have murderous police officers and prison guards who also brutalized the mentally ill. And they would get training so they would know how to effectively deal with mental illness without resorting to violence. Another thing that needs to be there that is not a part of the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act, it needs to be there but it's not, is that police officers and prison guards who do brutalize the mentally ill should be treated as criminals. They should have to face their criminal offenses rather than the system covering for them. But they have strong unions, police unions and correctional officers unions that protect such people who do violent things to the mentally ill. We have officials who also protect murderous police officers and prisoner guards. That needs to end. Everybody needs to have to follow the law, including police officers and prison guards. Don't you agree with that, Ms. Lillian?
Yes, I do, because I was brutalized by a policeman when I first came here to Denver. So I believe that.
What happened to the police officer who brutalized you?
He called me a squaw that likes to drink that fire water. I had handcuffs on behind my back, and I spit in his face for calling me that. And he turned around and started hitting me, swinging at me, and so I put my feet up and I started kicking at him, and they had to change handcuffs because he was an undercover agent and he thought we were doing a drug deal. I didn't do drugs. So they transferred me from that drug car to a regular police car. And when they were taking the handcuffs off, he said, watch out for this one. She's a wild one. So I spit in his face again because of what he said to me. Start seeing
so what happened to the officer? Who did you report your brutal arrest? Did you report that you were beaten while in handcuffs?
No, I was young and I was only 19, so I didn't realize that was a crime. And I went to court
twice. So
you
didn't report him, and you didn't realize it was a crime for police officers to beat a handcuffed subject. It's not treated like a crime. It is a crime, but it happens so often that you didn't even realize that he was wrong. Police officers also kill people, and it's found to be justified, even when the subjects are unarmed, even when they kill people who are in handcuffs. It's awful, and that needs to be a part of someone's bill. That there is zero tolerance for brutality out of police officers and prison guards. But that's not a part of the Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act. But somebody needs to introduce a bill to give zero tolerance to abusive police officers and prison guards. And we're about to go off the air. But I just want to let you know how much we appreciate you coming on air to talk to us about what Paul Castaway needs. Because he doesn't need anything that's any different than anyone else who's in jail or in a mental hospital with serious mental illness. Everybody in jail, out of all those inmates who are in jail, 90% of them have a release date in their file. Your son may be sentenced again for probation violation. And your son also has a child, and he's not paying child support. So he stands a very good chance of getting out, having no income to pay probation fees, having no income to pay child support, and going right back to jail. Do you realize that?
Yes, ma'am.
Your son, with his long history of mental illness, probably qualifies for Social Security benefits for his disability. Has he ever applied?
No, I've asked him many times. to.
The thing is that your son is a young man. He's a proud young man, and he does not want to acknowledge his illness. People are ashamed of being mentally ill. Some people are ashamed of their mentally ill relatives. And so what I urge you to do is to seek to get power of attorney over your son. And then if you are given power of attorney over your son, you could go and apply for Social Security for him. And then you could use his benefits to try to get him an apartment or get him in a group home. But the thing is that your son won't even acknowledge that he's mentally ill to get money. He won't do it for the life of him. And I mean that literally, because he's in a lot of danger being in these abusive prisons and jails. He's in a lot of danger walking around with his sound mind compromised by mental illness. He won't for the life of him accept treatment or even accept a check for the mentally ill. He won't accept disability benefits for his own good. So therefore, he has no funds to pay his probation fees. He has no funds to pay his child support. And so, again, the taxpayers will suffer right along with him because they will put him back in jail. I don't know what the going rate of prison is for Denver, but in New York, it was found to be $168,000 per year for one inmate. Let me say that again. $168,000 per year for one inmate in New York City. So, on that note, that's enough money to support a family of four for 4 years. 4 years. That is
wow.
One inmate for 1 year behind bars. Because who's getting the money? Private prison investors. The prison industry is making billions. In fact, it costs Americans $75 billion a year to incarcerate 2.3 million people, and over half of them have mental illness. So we had a simple program in our communities that provided them with subsistence assistance and treatment, we wouldn't have that huge prison budget. But, of course, people want us to have this huge prison debt because they're the ones who are the prison investors. I ask everyone to please support H.R. 3717, the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act, because the family you help will be your own. You either have relatives who are mentally ill or you are subjected to a much less safe community environment because of untreated mental illness. Furthermore, your tax money could go for better things than imprisoning your fellow man. Thank you for joining us on Release the Innocent. Ms. Lillian, I'll give you the final word.
Well, thank you very much for letting me be on the show and tell my story about my son, and God bless you, and thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, audience. Goodbye.
Goodbye.